Welcome to the Speak Up Talk Radio Network. I am your hostess, Pat Rulo. We bring you hand-selected hosts, podcasts, and talk radio programming with listening options, 24/7 streaming or listen on demand. We also feature one-on-one segments with important guests, people who have something to say that you need to hear. Visit speakuptalkradio.com. And right now, I have an author who wrote a book about elder care after caring for her mom. Now, this is something I've been doing going on 9 years now with my mom, so I know how important and valuable any shred of information and support can be. So to help us with that is Joan Edwards. Joan is the author of Joan's Elder Care Guide, Empowering You and Your Elder to Survive, published by 4RV Publishing. It provides caregivers the information they need to meet their needs and the needs of their elders in their care. Joan is also the author, illustrator of the children's picture book, Flip Flap Floodle. Joan's blog has over 350,000 views and over 300 subscribers and offers ways to improve writing and marketing skills to improve writers' chances to be published. Joan is a member of the Society of Children's Book Writers and Illustrators, and she enjoys spending her time with family and friends. She celebrates life with acceptance, love, and laughter, and she's here today to talk about caregiving. So welcome to the show, Joan.
Oh, thank you, Pat, and thank you so much for having me on your show. I am so honored that you invited me.
Oh, you're a sweetheart. Well, before we begin with the serious, I want you to tell us about your book, Flip Flap Floodle, and it's just a joy for me to say those words. I've been saying that in my mind like for the last week, just walking around thinking, Flip Flap Floodle. So I want to talk about that. I love that name. Tell us a little about that book.
Oh, thank you. Well, Flip Flap Floodle is a little duck who's learned to play on a flute, and he's so excited about his new song that he wants to go show his grandma how well he can play on his flute. So he's getting ready to take off to go to grandma's, and his mother says, "Watch out for Mr. Fox." And so Flip says, "Oh, my song will save me from Mr. Fox. I'll be fine, and I'll be home before dark." Well, Mr. Fox doesn't like Flip's song, and so he has a really big problem. But it turns out happily at the end, and Flip Flap Floodle is still playing his little song on his flute. It goes, Flip Flap Floodle, 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 Flip Flap Floodle, 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 Flip Flap Floodle, Floodle, Floodle. And the gist of the story is never give up on you and your song.
Oh, I love that even more. Thank you for sharing Flip Flap Floodle. I'm going to say that a couple more times before
you're welcome.
Before this interview's over, I'll just stick in a few Flip Flap Floodles. Well, all right, we're going to get serious. So let's talk about when you became a caregiver. How and why did you fit into your mom's health journey?
Well, in 1995, mother's pelvic bone broke and she fell. My cousin called me from Kinston, North Carolina, and told me that the doctor said mother might die within 24 hours, and it took me 6 hours or more to drive to the hospital. But you know what? Mother lived 14 years, not 24 hours. She just loved living. They didn't know how much she loved living.
That's actually so interesting when they give a person a death sentence not knowing anything about the fortitude or the willpower of the person inside. So there you go,
exactly.
Right?
Yeah, exactly. And God's will, right?
Yes, absolutely. So you were her caregiver for 2 years, is that correct?
14 years.
Oh, for the whole 14 years you looked after her. Okay. So when or why did you decide to write the book?
Well, after I'd been caring for Mother, and I had problems getting somebody to watch her where I didn't have problems afterwards, like she had real thin skin, and if I didn't tell the people not to touch her skin or to let her lift up her legs for her bath, then one time I came home and there was about a 6-inch gap in her skin, and it took more than six weeks for things like that to heal. And so I learned that I needed to give people who were staying with her more information. And so after a while, I got the plans really good. And the CNAs who came to take care of Mother told me, wow, they wished everybody gave such good information to them to care for the patients that they were caring for. So that made me decide, well, if this helped them so much, maybe it would help other people to do a good job. That's when I decided to write the book.
And bless you for doing that, because this kind of information is so, so important. So as you were a caregiver, and 14 years is a long time, there's so many decisions that need to be made. And so let's start with some of them. How can a caregiver decide what's best for both the patient and the caregiver, especially when it comes to living arrangements? Because I know we all have this guilt feeling. It's like, all right, you're going to come live with me. But that may not always be the best answer. So let's talk about that. How do you know?
Well, it depends upon your elder's physical and mental abilities and what she can do for herself and what care are you willing to do for her and what's the financial situation. You know, if they're going into a home, it's very expensive nowadays. And well, it's always been expensive, I guess. And if you have a job and you're wanting to keep your job, then you might have to look for, like, adult care. But as far as feeling guilty, I know a lot of people do. But if, for instance, if your parent has Alzheimer's, then it might be that having her in an institution is better for you and better for her, because she's going to demand 24 hours of care. And it's hard to get that yourself at home in a home setting, to have people that you can have to come in for 24 hours, because that's very expensive unless you have a good friend that's a nurse and that would be willing to come in. That's what I discovered.
Mm-hmm. It's not a one-size-fits-all answer. You really do need to look at all of those aspects of it. And yet, if you're looking for care outside of the home, then there's a lot of research that goes into that. Let's talk a little bit about research. How important is that, and how should we go about that task?
Well, if you, the computers, the internet furnishes a lot of resources for you. And my book, I listed a lot of resources within the book that I thought people might use to help. A Place for Mom is a good place to go if you wanted to call them, and they'll tell you names of places that fit the needs of you and your elder something, and they don't charge you anything for giving you the information. They just give you the names and the telephone numbers and the addresses of places within your area. And then if you decide on a place, then those particular homes or whatever would pay a Place for Mom. But there are other people, like social services. I would suggest people to check with their social services and see what's available in their particular counties, because they have a lot of resources today, whereas when I started out in 1995 to 2000, there weren't many resources available.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so it's wise to use those resources, and please don't just pick something out of the phone book, or the name sounds cute, or they're just located down the street. Those are not valid reasons to select a facility or location. So there is a lot of research that goes in, so thanks for sharing some of those. How can a caregiver then meet both the patient's needs while also tending to their own? I mean, that's a huge question, because with both people, both parties, and maybe even the entire family, everybody comes to this with their own physical, mental, emotional, spiritual, and social needs. How do you juggle all of that?
Yeah, that's an interesting thing. A caregiver can, though, meet the patient's needs and their own by realizing they are just as important as the person for whom they are caring. By placing a plan in place at the very beginning to alternate activities, like do an activity your elder likes and then do one of your favorite activities. And as far as like the family, it's kind of fun to figure out, well, what kind of things, say if it's the grandma that they're caring for, well, what activities do any of the children or grandchildren like to do, like to play board games or to watch TV, like watch a ball game, a sport, or if they can actually still go out, then to take them to a ball game if somebody in the family loves that. And so So schedule regular time away from the caregiving duties because you get burnt out without realizing it. I was talking to a lady the other day. She said, you know, you're right. Said, you keep the caregivers sometimes put things off for themselves. Well, I'll do that tomorrow or I'll do that next week. And lo and behold, they're burnt out and they're feeling really bad. And then the caregiver needs to have a little bit more help than the elder does.
That is absolutely true. I can attest to that. Caregiver burnout is pretty dangerous because then you're not available to take care of the person anymore. And so it behooves those that are caring to stop and pay attention to themselves and allow other people to help.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah. To believe there is a way, look for it.
Mm-hmm.
Look for it. If you believe it, then you'll find it. If you believe it's out there. And then once you find it, use the one that's good for you.
Yep. And maybe even have a conversation with the person you're caring for if you can, and just to say, hey, you know, I'm getting to the point here. I'm getting a little frazzled. I need a little bit of a break, and I'm going to arrange to have so-and-so here, and maybe at least make them aware of it, I think.
Yeah, I think so. And there's one thing that I try to remind people to do is to tell your elder or whoever, you know, I'm going to take care of you as long as I can. But when I find out that I can't, then I'm going to find a place where other people can help take care of you mm-hmm. and provide what you need.
Good. That's great advice as well. Let's talk about some organizational tips. These are things people don't think about because taking care of someone with a medical issue creates all kinds of paperwork, and there's appointments and medication administration and legal documents. So share some ways that we can plan to be organized.
Well, there, I guess each person like has their own things that work for them. If they're the modern, up-to-date young people, they have some apps out there to help caregivers, and like you can put the medications and things like that. And then there are some charts that you can use. My book has some charts to help people organize things like the legal documents, the financial things, so that you know where they are in the house or if you have them available. Like if you don't have a health power of attorney, then telling you where, you know, like you probably want to get one and have your elder to sign it while she's alert and able to, or he is alert and able to. So there are things like that that they can do. I found like having a notebook was really good to put the information in and the latest doctor's appointments and words that what he said, advice that he had said about the elder. And also, if someone else is coming to care for your elder, you can write down different notes, but make sure that you tell them personally about the medications that they are to give.
Oh, you just said something huge. Yes, that kind of centers around the thought of continuity of care, so that if you've got more than one person looking after the elder, if each person takes notes, then the next person that comes in can see what happened. And as you progress through time, you can look back and basically paint a picture, because it's communication that tends to break down. And if you've got all these papers and all these conversations that are just up in the air or not written down, there is no continuity of care and no communication. So let's talk about communication while we're at it. Your book highlights three situations where communication is key: with the patient, family and friends, and substitute caregivers, as you just mentioned, with healthcare professionals, and with legal, financial, and insurance professionals. Let's talk about the communication aspect with each one of those.
Okay, so when you're talking to your elder, like you mentioned before, you need to spell it out ahead of time so that both of you know what you're willing to do. And if you want to, you can even write down what you're willing to do for 6 months or a year, or asking your spouse, like before my husband Carl and I got married, I told him that Mother and I were a package deal because I was already caring for her, and that if he wanted me, then, you know, she came along. So but he said he loved my mother and would be willing to do that. So having people agree at the very beginning, and asking your children and your grandchildren what they're willing to do to help taking care of your parent or your spouse or whoever it is. It could even be a young person that you're caring for, whoever it is. Then if you spell it out ahead of time, then it puts you at ease and you're not expecting yourself to do more than what you're already doing, because sometimes things escalate and it you can no longer do what you want to do. And so to keep yourself from feeling guilty, remember that what's good for you and your elder is it's got to be what's good for both of you, not just one.
Right.
So I guess that, and as far as like doctors, in my book I have a chart where you can fill in the things that your elder can do, and you keep updating that. And so when you go to the doctors, then you can explain, well, she's no longer able to do this anymore, or she's that medication you gave her isn't working too good, it's giving her problems. She can't keep her balance now, whereas she was not having any problems with her balance before she started taking that medicine. So communication is really key to keeping yourself in a good emotional state.
Right.
And also communicating with professionals such as legal, financial, and insurance professionals. That's a key that I think that people don't think about.
Right, yeah. And, I know that sometimes you might have somebody that that a person has recommended, and if you're for sure trusting them, like a friend told me the other day that she had a BS meter. And I just laughed and laughed, and I said, that is so cool. So, you know, if the inner gut feeling that you have, I call it like God talking to you or whatever, your gut is not going off and saying no, no, no about this person, then you know, go and listen to them and, you know, meet with a financial person. And maybe if they're not giving you advice all along, they might be able to give you some clues as to where you need to start.
Right.
And they can tell you legally and financially much better advice than wondering.
So many aspects to this, isn't there?
Oh, yes, yeah. Definitely, yeah. A lot. My mother, she had a pension from my daddy before he died, and he set up with where he worked. And so she received Social Security and also received a pension from him.
Mm-hmm.
But if she had gone to a nursing home, it would have taken all of that.
Yeah.
Every month.
Yeah.
I mean, it was so, and I couldn't afford it either. So, and she had done so many things to help other people that I wanted to try to keep her out of a rest home as long as I could. And I did up until about a month before she died.
Wow. Yeah, we're on the same page. I've done everything I can to keep my mom home. She's still home. So, yep, it's
a... I'm proud of you for doing that. That's a real blessing, a gift to her for you doing that.
Well, thank you. I think that's why you and I were attracted to each other here. And we didn't need a BS meter, did we?
No, we didn't. There was none of that going on. All truthfulness and helpfulness.
Oh my gosh, I wonder if we could start marketing a BS meter. We'd probably sell a lot of them, right?
I'll have to ask my friend. I didn't ask if I could use it today in the conversation, but I just told her that was so cool.
I know, that's funny. Oh gosh. All right, so let's think about this. What are your top three most important lessons that you learned as a caregiver that you would like others to know?
Well, the three most important lessons that I would like a caregiver to know are, number one is keep your elder doing everything that he can for himself as long as possible. Don't do for your elder what he can do for himself, because then you stop his power of wanting to live. He doubts himself. Okay, number two, plan regular time away from caregiving duties every week. And then three is leave detailed plans with the schedule and abilities and needs of your elder for those who will care for your elder while you're away. And may I add one more, a fourth?
You can add as many as you like. This is good.
Okay, my fourth is to ask questions. Mm-hmm. Many times we don't know what questions to ask, and so we just ponder around, wondering, and then when they surface, honor yourself and ask them. And keep asking different health care professionals and other people until you get a satisfactory answer that meets your needs and those of your elder. I know there are many times I don't know what to ask them. Mm-hmm. I tell my husband, I just don't know what to ask, so mm-hmm. I can't ask about it. So then when a question comes up, then when I did have a question, then I wrote it down and made sure that I asked them when I went to the doctor or I found somebody that could give me the answer.
Mm-hmm.
And then I asked the doctor, I said, well, if you can't tell me, well, who can? Who do I need to call? Are they in right now?
Mm-hmm.
Can I call them now? Or, you know, just so that you don't give up on it. Because this person doesn't know the answer, that doesn't mean that somebody won't be able to give you the answer. I've found so many times, like with writing this book, with caring for my mother, and with my life in general, when you believe certain things, when you believe that you can find it, then you do. Sort of like from the scripture, ask and you shall receive. So believe and it will be given to you. So that's so true in life.
Oh, you are awesome. I'm glad you added the fourth one, because ask questions. And so many of us, as you say, A, we don't know what questions to ask, or B, we're afraid to ask. And so maybe ahead of a doctor's appointment, write them down, write down any potential question, and then let the doctor know that you have those questions. And so they're not going to run out of the room before you get a chance to ask and say, hey, I've got these six questions. And then they know right then they're not getting out. Until
right.
those questions are answered.
Yeah, and if they can't answer, then say, well, who does know?
Mm-hmm.
Or, you know.
Yep.
Like so many times they just don't know the answer, so then we leave it. But then I added this extra one then, well, who does know?
Yep.
You know, how can I get in touch with them?
Exactly. Why should you leave with your questions unanswered? You are the advocate for your elder or whomever you're looking after, and if that person doesn't have a voice, if they cannot speak, that puts quite a responsibility on you as the advocate. So yeah, you can't give up and just say, well, gee, I don't know, he didn't know, and now no one knows.
Right.
Yep.
You got to keep on and try not to think about their reactions to your questions. Just think, focus on you're going to get the answer to the question.
Mm-hmm.
Because it will be better for you and for your elder. It's not just only for, because you're sort of a twosome.
You are a twosome. You're a package deal, Joan.
Right.
Well, you know, maybe even to frame it to that doctor, if somebody says, I don't know. She say, well, if this was your mom and you were looking after her, where would you go to get that answer? I mean, kind of put it back on them. What would you do if this was your mom?
Yeah, right.
You know? Well, now, even though we do our best, and, you know, you've spent 14 years, I've spent 9 years, I mean, there comes a point in time when the end of life is near. So let's talk about end of life care.
A very emotional time. And there were, mother had osteoporosis, so her bones broke and then she fell. And this last time, her right hip broke. And she fell, and I went to her in the bedroom, and she said, help me up. And I told her, I said, Mother, I'm sorry. I can't help you up. I said, your hip is broken. I can see that. And so I'm going to have to call 911. And I guess that brings me to another thing. Tell your elder and make sure other people tell her exactly what they're going to do.
Mm-hmm.
And introduce themselves to your elder. Not necessarily to you, because she is the one. If she's the one that they're caring for, then they need to speak first to her and not to you, because it's very important to do that. Well, anyway, so when I took Mother to the hospital then, and I kept trying to find ways to help her to survive, and then there were so many things that were going wrong that I couldn't figure out which way to go, so I called my daughter, Molly, my younger daughter. I said, Molly, I can't figure out which way to go. There are six different things wrong with Mother, and I don't know which one to try to get them to focus on. And so she said, well, that's it, Mama. You got to prioritize. So which one is the most important? So I said, well, she wasn't swallowing very well. And so I said, that's it. She can't get food or sustenance, so that's the most important. So I focused on that, and then they said that her esophagus, like her swallowing mechanisms, were not working anymore. Mm-hmm. So then everything that she ate and drank was going into her lungs.
Right.
And so that was causing her to cough and everything. So I said, oh, my goodness, I don't know. So then when the doctors told me that that this was one of the first signs of mother's body closing down, that, you know, she, that there are different organs, and when one of them sort of stops working or gets on the fritz, then you know that the time is going to come, like the heart, the lungs, the kidneys, and different things like that. So if one of the main organs shuts down, it may mean that the end is near. Mm-hmm. And if doctors think it may be 6 months or less until death, then your elder may go to hospice. And hospice makes sure that their patients are comfortable. They meet all of their, I don't know what they call,
palliative care?
Yeah.
Yes.
And so they make sure that they're comfortable, make sure that their needs are met, like their spiritual needs. And so they have a minister that's on call, and social services people that are on call, a nurse, an RN, and a doctor, and they have all those people that are on call. I was under the impression that someone from hospice would stay with the patient 24 hours a day, but actually either I misunderstood what somebody had told me or saw the 24 hours, and they're available,
mm-hmm.
but they are not there with the patient all the time.
Right.
So they're available on the phone, and if something has come up that you're frightened of or you're unsure of and they can't talk you out of it, then they come there right away, and, well, within an hour anyway, you know, to help you. So I found out when my sister, Janet, was able to come right before Mother died, like I guess about 2 weeks before she died, and she was able to be with me when Mother was on hospice and also in the hospital the week before that. It's really a great idea to have two family members or caregivers to care for someone in hospice, one to run errands and one to stay there, one to sleep while the other one watches.
Mm-hmm.
So we found out that worked really good. And then I had some caregivers who had come to do private duty before, and so then and even social services sent somebody, that same person, out to do that was caring for her before she went to the hospital. I've found that it's amazing to me how God had sent help to me whenever I needed it when I was caring for my mom.
Mm-hmm.
And I believe that he does that for other people too, if they're open to it and believe it and to remember that God loves them too, and to not be the forgotten ones. And it's good to be selfless, but if you don't take care of yourself, you're not going to be able to help anybody. Sort of like the lady, the stewardess says, you know, if something happens, an emergency on the plane, give oxygen to yourself first and then help those around you.
Right, right. Great analogy. Thank you for bringing that one up. That's a good point. Bless you for the work that you did with your mom as well.
Thank you.
I know that you probably miss her terribly, but that you did all that you could to give her a nice life and a peaceful ending.
Yeah. I did. And she was a fun person. I'll tell you, I'll end on a happy story.
Okay,
about it.
Let's
it was
do
just
that.
A fun story.
Okay.
My husband came home from work one day, and this was probably about 6 months before she died. And he was complaining because people at work, especially one person, had given him a hard time. And so she said, just who is this that was giving you a hard time? Tell me who it was. I'm going to go down there and I'm going to whoop up on them. He went to work the next day and said, "All right, you guys, you better treat me right, or my 92-year-old mother-in-law is going to come down here and whoop up on you."
How sweet is that? I mean, she still had the fire and the concern to go to bat for him, right?
Yeah. Is that not awesome?
I love that. That's a good story.
Yeah, thank you.
Oh, my gosh, Joan. Well, is there anything else then that you would like to talk about that we missed today?
Well, just to remember to, for each person who might be listening or is watching someone else or knows someone who is taking care of someone else, be it an elder or a young child or whoever, to make sure that you look after yourself too, because you're doing yourself and that person a favor, because you're going to be more emotionally satisfied and ready to help, and spiritually ready to help, and just meeting your needs and your elders, I think.
Yep.
And another thing I found was very interesting when I was doing research for my book is that they've discovered that the elderly people who are socially active live a little bit longer and seem to be a little bit happier. So when you're caring for someone else, don't block out the visitors necessarily. Try to keep your social life up and share it with your elder. My mother loved to go to restaurants, and so she had this one restaurant in Matthews, North Carolina, called The Fireside. It's now the Americana, but she would go there and she would meet people, and she said that's the restaurant where people become friends. And so I took her there, wasn't able to go every day like she did, but I took her once a week as often as I could until, you know, it got where I couldn't do that. So the social part is very important, and a lot of people don't realize that. Mm-hmm. So keep yourself, like your social life and your elders, as active as you can. Not totally, you know, running around all the time, but, you know.
Get them out and about. Yeah, get them out and about. Right. Well, where can then folks go to learn more about you? And most importantly, where can they purchase your book, Joan's Elder Care Guide? And I've got to say it again, Flip Flap Floodle.
Well, you can buy them. You can buy Flip Flap Floodle on Amazon and Barnes & Noble. And it comes in paperback and also in Kindle. You can buy Joan's Elder Care Guide from 4RV Publishing. You can also buy it from Amazon, where it was decreed, when it was released, it was number 2 and 3 on the top new releases for the whole month. The month that the 30 days, the first 30 days it was out there was 2 and 3, and then I think it went to 8. Before the 30 days was up. And so I was really proud of that, and I really hope that my book will help people to believe in themselves and their elder. And then you can also buy Joan's Elder Care Guide on Amazon and Barnes & Noble, and you can learn more about me. And also the links for purchasing the books are on my website, joanyedwards.com. And then I have a blog that I guess one of the most read articles is 15 things to do when you get disappointed. I have other articles like about writing and illustrating and never giving up on that blog is joanyedwards.wordpress.com.
Excellent. A lot of resources folks can get a hold of your book. So I encourage everyone, whether they've got someone that they're caring for right now or could potentially be in that situation, because we all have that chance that we may be looking after someone. So you might as well know ahead of time and become empowered and informed. Head over to Joan's website, joanyedwards.com. And as Joan says, never give up. Joan, this was an awesome interview. Thank you for sharing you and your mom's story with us today.
You're welcome, Pat, and thank you for sharing me on your Speak Up Talk Radio, and I love your logo, Always On For You. That is so cool.
Thank you, Joan.
Believe in you.